Recording. Right. So this is Homie and the Dude, episode 12, and we are joined today by Fraser and Ivan Proctor from the China Bears. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, good, thanks. How are you guys?
Yeah. Really good, man. Yeah. Psyched. Been listening to your music for the last, I don't know, for a while now. So it's been nice to, get like acquainted with your
music. Thank you very much. Thank you.
No, yeah. Obviously, you know, I know you guys from when we spent time together at college. You guys were in the music department. I was in performing arts. We were pretty much bumping into each other and doing, you know, matinees and whatnot in front of each other all the time. Tell us, obviously, you know, when I knew you guys at the time, I had heard kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, I remember hearing rumors at the time that you guys were kind of thinking about China Bears. There was like a rumor about you guys starting a band, and I think I'd heard the name China Bears floated at the time, but I don't think you guys had gone deep into like delving in the music as at that point yet. So tell us a bit of the journey of from when I knew you at college to where you guys are now with China Bears.
So how were you at college? Like 16, 17? Mm. So yeah, that it just sort of started around then, the idea of basically Fraser and I were in a band at school. I played drums and Fraser played guitar. And this new band, which became China Bears, was just a band which I wanted to play guitar in because I had just started to write some songs and learn how to play the guitar. And then that, we had a few friends at college. And then the name China, we were under the name China Bears then, just before I think we went to uni. Yeah. And then we had a few lineup changes when we moved to uni. Mm. And that's where we met James and Dean. But yeah, I guess at college it was the initial, like, we were starting to write songs, I guess. And we just liked the name China Bears, we really liked, so I just sort of carried through. Mm. But
yeah, because we don't really play any of the same songs from that time anymore, I don't think.
Was it just you two in college?
Yeah. So, and our friends, Rosie and Henry at the time, they made up the drums and the bass, but because of moving and then they wanted to get into other things, that lineup sort of shifted.
It wasn't really, I guess we were just a band, like just friends and playing music. It wasn't really like a band, mm-hmm. I think until, I suppose, uni, when we kind of met, like, saw more like a bigger, like, I think me and Ivan enjoyed writing songs together, and we were like, oh yeah, we should just carry this over and see if people at Guildford want to join it and maybe make something of it. And that's kind of how it happened, really.
Yeah. So you guys went to the Academy of Contemporary Music in Guildford, right?
Yeah, that's where we went to.
Yeah.
We've done our research, man.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I've actually heard good things about that. And actually, we had a guest, our second guest on the show was a young lady named Ella Joy. I'm not sure if you know her. Yeah.
We don't really know each other personally, but I might have said hi to her maybe at shows or something, but I don't. But yeah, she was in a band there. But yeah, I did recognize her, but we don't really know each other very well.
No. Yeah, I was going to say, she sung high praises about the university and about what they're doing there. How did you guys find that experience? Because obviously coming from college where you guys have this idea, you lose some of your members, you go into university, and, you know, how did you then formulate the idea, cool, we're going to take these two guys, James and Dean, and what, like, led to that kind of grabbing of those two and moving forward then and leading into the next stage after the college bit?
I think, well, we were on the same uni course. We all studied the songwriting degree. Mm. So they were just classmates. And I think Dean, I just knew, played drums. We actually lived only around the corner from each other during that time. So we just sort of became friends because we used to walk down to the uni together. And he knew that Fraser and I had these songs under the name China Bears. And it kind of, that just kind of became somewhat, one day Dean, was just in the band. Mm-hmm. But with James, I guess we auditioned for a bass player. We were like, oh, we want a bass. And then we just got on with James the most and really liked, it just felt right when We were all together in the room. But I still even then, like those I still consider those days really embryonic to what we are now. Like we were still kind of finding our feet very much during those uni days, I think. Like looking back, I think we thought we had a lot figured out, but yeah, we actually knew nothing at all.
So talk a little bit more about that. Like, okay, so you had an idea of what you were going to be then, and time has passed. You guys now have been together for a while, more songs have come out, but talk about how that transition's happened and what feels more right now.
I think at uni, it was a really nice bubble. Guildford was a great, like there were shows every week, or pretty much every night really. Everyone you knew was in a band or doing something, a DJ or a producer or like just a performer or musician. So it's a real nice atmosphere to be in, but then it isn't really the real world. So, you know, we had a nice 2 years there and, you know, we were very well received, which is nice. And like, we had a lot of opportunities, like played a lot of shows. And I remember when we graduated and we had, it was one of our earlier days in London and we played to no one. And we were just kind of like, we have a lot to learn. because it's easy to, we found it easy to like perform and have a good show when there was an audience that vibed with it or responded to it. But when you're playing to people who have never heard of you, do you know what I mean? It's a bit of a tougher show, but
yeah,
you have, that's also another skill you have to learn. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So those first 2 years were great because it gave us that sort of springboard to find our sound, like play a lot of shows, sort of figure out how we do it. And then I suppose since then, those next 2 years, because we graduated uni in, was it 2017? I think it was 2017. So then we spent like a good 2 years after that just playing
anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, probably like 200 shows just to anyone.
Wow.
And it only really got to, I guess, 2019 was like the year it was like, oh, things are, maybe we were doing something right. Like it was kind of.
Well, I thought up until 2019, like it's a weird stage, like, because obviously we were quite, well, still are young, but younger at the time, we were still sort of growing as musicians and always growing, but like, particularly back then, we were kind of just learning how to play as a band. Whereas I didn't really think until, yeah, like Fred said, around 2019, it was like, oh, if you came to see China Bears, you would think more, oh, okay, this is a band, as opposed to when you saw us at uni days, it was like, oh, these are still four friends, like, figuring it out. But maybe that's just, maybe I always think that it's four friends figuring it out. But
no, that's sick. You know, I think it's interesting you guys talked about just, like, the performing to no one and that kind of thing, like, I know what that feels like when you've got a group of people in front of you who just are not either not on board or just have no clue what is going on and you're just trying to win them over. But I assume stage presence was a big part of that. Have you started implementing some sort of like stage presence in terms of like conversing with the crowd or like that kind of thing now into your set? Or is it more just let the music talk for itself and just you guys do what you do?
I think it's definitely part of something you learn during what you're playing. Like, you know, there was times where you feel like you have to speak all the time. And that's definitely something, the more shows we've done, the more you sort of find the sweet spots in the set where, oh, I say something here, or, you know, it's fine to just to go on into the next tune without, you don't need to like mumble and trip over your words. Like, there doesn't need to be constant chatter. So that's like a part of performing which I think we've just worked on. To be honest, I think that was harder really than actually getting up and playing. I've always found that more difficult. It's particularly like being the front man, I guess, and like doing most of the talking in between songs. It's like, oh, knowing what like the right things to say or just when to just shut up and I think we're a better balanced place now the more we've got into it, but it's definitely we struggled with, I think.
Yeah.
During those early days of just, make it more of a show, I guess, as a bit, yeah. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's something we take on board a lot and try to better each time.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say it because, like, I was talking to Tom about, like, what my impression of you guys was when we knew each other at college. And I remember always, like, I remember, first of all, you guys, I think you performed an Arctic Monkeys song, like, early days in a matinee. And I just remember being like, holy shit, Ivan, your voice was, like, absolutely nuts. And your guys, like, team, like, meld and, like, the chemistry between you guys was real, like, magical, I guess, I thought, early days. But I always said to Tom, I was like, you guys were very, from what I perceived, more shy and more like doing your own thing kind of while we're at college. And so I can understand. I also remember as well, you guys being on stage a couple of times and yeah, being very much about the music. And it was never the music that was a problem. I also remember thinking that at the time and being like, you guys are so musically talented. Like, it's insane. For even the age that you were at that point, you guys were nuts. Like, way down the line, you're so much better now, which is amazing to hear, especially when, you know, I'm listening to your recorded music now and you guys have come so far since, you know, those Wednesday afternoons, you know, that we'd have together. And I think your point of that growth has been really awesome to see from the sidelines as well, actually, even though it's been, you know, from behind closed doors or whatever. You know, it's been really awesome to see you guys doing what you do.
But yeah, there's definitely, yeah, like, we struggle. So talking about what you say, confidence on stage, like, we would watch friends bands or just, you know, the various numerous shows we've done, seeing bands and their front bands, or I think genre definitely helps, like, how engaging these, because I looked at friends bands and okay, some of them are being really like sort of engaging and aggressive in the way they come across on stage and jumping in the crowds and getting everyone to do things, and then we would go on and we would be this almost like sheepish.
Yeah.
We'd be like, oh, hey, thanks for coming. We're just band China Bears. And then we'd play. And then there'd be moments in the set where we kind of, I guess, feel more relaxed. And, but yeah, it's definitely something we've been, how do we want to be perceived? Because also the music we write isn't so, I mean, it has like euphoric moments, but it's kind of melancholy and it kind of it's tamed a lot, and then it, you know, has its energy chaotic bits and sections, but so it's kind of how do we keep the set engaging without necessarily having to shout the loudest, but almost like the music do the talking. But yeah, it's a blend of the two, I guess. I think a really good conversation we had once was we did the show in London, and the sound engineer at the end of the show was like, oh, you guys sound really great, but you look like you aren't having a very nice time. You just don't. And it was a really nice, I can't remember his name, but we were chatting for maybe like an hour and a half, and it was a really nice conversation. And yeah, from then, I really started to think about, because you might think you're doing something grand on stage by like moving slightly, but then it's actually not that, doesn't come across as big of an emotion as you were hoping, like when you watch videos back. And so it's something where, yeah, if I'm gonna move, then make it noticeable, I guess, and almost like a show, make it visually engaging. Like, we spent a lot of time on the sound, but we didn't spend a lot of time on how we were being viewed. So,
but I don't think we never really like sat down in a rehearsal and were like planned any of this. I think we just played a lot of shows that we just sort of in our own little, I don't even remember us really ever talking about it. It was just internally like, oh, I'm going to try this today. Not really tell anyone. And then just watch a video back if there was videos or how it felt at the time. And then just do it from then on. So like when I look at us now compared to like 2 years ago, I think we've just got more confident with it, but without ever really properly talking about it, which is quite odd. Whereas how much we argue over the music, you know, to a minute level, and like how angry we can get each other about that, this sort of thing, I don't really remember ever like going into that depth to it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, there's two things that came to mind. One is if you really try to like contrive your engagement, your excitement, it comes across as kind of fake. So you got like,
yeah,
especially like with your style as well. Like if you guys on guitars were like bouncing around on stage and like doing like, you know, axe movements or, you know, whatever, like Jimi Hendrix stuff, it just doesn't work. And it also like, it comes across as just not authentic. Right. So you can tell the difference from some people when they're trying to just overdo it to get the crowd going. But the other side of it though is, and it's a really good point, is whatever you think you're doing is usually less than what people are seeing. Like you think you're like out there, like doing, like really moving a lot. And you said it, Ivan, like you feel like you're making, you know, like we both have had experience with acting, and sometimes you feel like you're really open and fluid and everything. And then you look at it on video and you're like, it still looks kind of reserved, you know, yeah. Even though I felt like in the moment I was really like bouncing around. So there's both sides of that, right? There's, I don't want to fake it, but yeah. I also want it to be noticed when I'm like, you know, when I'm feeling it, so to speak.
Definitely. And it's finding that balance of making, like you said, it look natural and feeling natural, as opposed to, you know, you're faking it. And it's like, well, I don't know, that just makes it, because then you get too in your head about it. And it's like, I'm focusing on, yeah, it's not really good.
And then you're forgetting you're on stage and all kinds of shit goes wrong from that point onwards.
But you know, like, you
become this jittery person at the end. Like, oh, thanks. Yeah, for, yeah. And we'll go back to that. Oh, thanks for coming. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I reckon there's some bands, though, that have the whole thing choreographed. Like, they have, like, exactly what the, you know, there's got to be, right? Where the guitar player is like doing his thing and then the, you know, the lead singer goes up to him and like they do a little thing and then they come away and it's like, it's a whole like show basically.
I would say it's interesting because I was actually going to mention a lot of bands I like that I have seen, especially like smaller bands, ones that, you know, I'm sure you guys have played in Bristol, you know, bands at the Exchange, you know, the Fleece, yeah. Smaller venues, you know, things like that. Typically, it's one of those situations where they don't have, in some cases, you know, like you said, that incredible stage presence. And something that it's a big one for people to learn is that, yeah, animating yourself in a way that is true to yourself, but also maybe a just dialed up version of that is kind of the ideal. But I think you guys are totally right. And I think for any bands that ever listen to this podcast, if they ever do, you know, it's a great one to take away to think about of just, you know, this is a real thing that you need to be considering is your whole performance. It's not just the music, it's the whole package, because your recorded music is part of that package. Your live music is part of that package. Your live presence is part of that package. Your PR rep with people is all part of that package. And that whole performance comes down to you guys, you know, doing all of that. And I think you're totally right with that whole, you need to adapt different areas and different aspects of the whole performance, not just the music. Because again, like you guys have said, you know, you spend time talking about the music all the time, but then individually you're all considering and adapting your own physical performance, which is really important, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's not making it so it's not a gimmick, because you know, like a band that really comes to mind is October Drift. I don't know if you guys are familiar. They're pretty local to here, like Taunton based. But yeah, every time I see them, I've seen them at sold out shows and I've seen them play to 20 people because we've supported them a few times and I've just been to support. But yeah, and it's, you'll get the exact same thing on stage, and they've really learned how to, you can play the same 200 people and you can play the same like 4 people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something pretty admirable. And it's like a level of professionalism when you get with a band, where, yeah, this is just who they are, and it's that's part of the show, it's part of the music, it's part of the experience, and not to let the empty rooms put you down. And
yeah,
I think when you can reach that level of comfort within yourself and what you're doing, and not let that matter like so much out what's going on out on this in the what's the word, the audience, affect how you're performing on stage, is, yeah, I think that's kind of a good place to be. And that takes time, but in our case anyway. So yeah, but I think that's a really important part of being in a band, like yeah. You said, is you go and see the whole package, and
yeah, and, you know what I was going to ask? You mentioned earlier, you know, about your guys' style of music being more, you know, melodic, and, you know, you have moments of euphoria, which, you know what, I was actually going to, quick segue, I was going to bring up your song Sunday, because for me, that song is actually typically my Saturday morning or my Sunday morning song, actually when I get up first thing, because it's chill enough that for the first like couple of minutes of it, I'm relaxed and I'm enjoying the mellow tune. And then as it builds towards the end, by the end of the song, I'm eating my toast and I'm ready for the day. Like it's one of like absolute rituals for me and my girlfriend. We love that one. And I think, you know, something that I'm really interested in, I wanted to ask you guys about, is me and Tom both noticed that a lot of your music is about relationships. So there's a lot of stuff about love and passion and stuff like that. We wanted to ask, is there a muse? Is there a person that this stuff is being written about, or is it just collectively individual people that you guys are bringing to the plate when you're writing the songs for your muses?
Yeah, there's definitely people in mind. We like to keep it as like autobiographical as we can, mainly because, well, that's just what comes to why we like writing songs. It's a way of expressing feelings and thoughts. So a lot of it is personal within our lives. Sometimes there is some moments are sort of a feeling, and it's like catching a feeling that is most intense and writing about that, I guess. So so some songs, so for example Sunday, I guess, well, Fraser actually wrote that one, but from conversations, I guess it was like a
it's sometimes when writing songs, it's kind of like maybe you feel this feeling and then 10 minutes later you don't really connect with that feeling anymore, but it's sometimes nice to capture how you felt at that moment. So there's this one, I listened to this podcast about Lorde, and she was talking about that. So even though you might be maybe embarrassed by that feeling, it's kind of like, well, it's nice to talk about it because you felt it. So with Sunday, that was just kind of like, it's when we first moved to uni, and it was just me. It wasn't really about anyone in particular, like the pronouns in it isn't really about someone. That was more just about that time of life where we were going through a lot of change, and like, I don't know if you felt it, Bernie, but at like a music school or a drama school, there's a lot of, you're comparing yourself to a lot of people, there's, you know, all your peers. So it was kind of about that, really. It was about feeling, am I good enough? Do I deserve to be here? Which is weird, because it's kind of become one of our fan favorites, and I really didn't like it, and I never showed anyone for a long time. Yeah. And it was kind of shelled for 2 years. And then
yeah, it was really.
We were like, I played it, and then we didn't really do anything with it, and then it was always on our to-do list, and then now it's kind of become
Our favorites.
It's our closer now as well. So
yeah, it's kind of,
which has been quite nice.
It's really quite ironic, actually.
It is quite ironic.
We were talking about a song about not feeling like you're good enough or any good, and it's one of collectively as a four, like one of our favorites, and it just happens that that's one that. One of the ones that have engaged better with everyone. So yeah, it's really nice actually. Something that what we like to do a lot of time is take something negative, like a dark time, and then just turn it into something good, I guess. Or not necessarily has to be good as in someone who thinks it's very good, but you've made a positive thing out of it. Oh, we've created something, and whether or not people like it or not, that doesn't really matter, because we've we've created something out of this experience, and I don't necessarily need to look at it as such a dark time anymore. It's like we got through it, I guess. And that's kind of why this band was even made.
I think it's super cool as well, because the song, so from the audience's, from the listener's perspective, certainly from what I'm thinking about when I think about the song, is it's about a relationship, and it's really it's a pretty, you know, emotional thing, right? That you want the best to happen, and you want this person, your partner, to be like, you know, someone that is as happy as you are in the relationship, and you guys deserve each other, but they're struggling. Yeah. So that's a metaphor though for just where you were in your life. And I thought that's really brilliant how you guys like took just that feeling, right? Of not knowing whether you fit or not, and putting that into, you know, this metaphor that for me, it's certainly connected big time. It's a really strong song.
Thank you, man. I think that's what's really nice about it, how it's personal enough for me, but kind of like vague enough where I don't want people, I quite like it when people have different interpretations of it. I mean, I've had some people reviewing it. I thought it was kind of like about just going out on a Saturday night and being hungover on a Sunday and that sort of lifestyle. And
nice.
It's quite, I think that's what's quite nice about songwriting, is you don't really know what you're talking about until you look at it afterwards.
Mm.
Like it felt cohesive enough at the time, and then you record it and then you can kind of dissect it after, I don't know, sometimes. Which is always good to not put pressure on your lyrics a lot of the time. Like, I'm not even like I used to, that was another one written around a similar time. I think I was a bit braver then. I think I just wrote what I was feeling and then didn't really think about like who the pronouns were or all this stuff to maybe give it some vagueness. But then we have other songs which are very, very obviously what they're about, which I quite like having that mix in our like set list.
Yeah. Do you know what, as well, I was going to say actually another weird one, if people want to like listen to this song and get ideas from what we've all said in terms of our interpretations, a whole another way to listen to that song is watching the video as well, because your music video to song is personally like my favorite bit about that, because the creativity, I don't know who came up with the idea, I don't know where you got the idea for that, but man, I absolutely love that video. The filming is phenomenal, the color palettes are great, like the whole concept is really awesome, that you guys are in the bathtub and it's filling up and then you're singing underwater and like, oh, it's just amazing. I absolutely loved it. Well, like explain some of that to me.
You showed me that video like I don't know, like,
years ago,
a couple years ago. And you were just like, I didn't really connect up that you guys were in college together. You just kind of showed it to me as a band, and that's totally like, you know, there's certain things that are memorable. Mm. Like I've seen probably hundreds of those, but that was like Bodhi's saying, a really just a very strong visual image that goes with people. People, you probably get people commenting on it a lot, but it was
That's been really nice.
It's like, it's like a lot of things within this band. We were struggling with an idea, and then one day, I think because there's a lyric. I think that there's a lyric about in the bridge of the bathtub.
Around the bath and everything.
And now the water's gone cold. So when we were doing the artworks, I was like, we want for each single on the I've Never Met Anyone Like You EP, we wanted a porcelain figure to represent the song.
Mm-hmm.
And then we chose a bathtub for that because of the lyric. And then why don't we just get a bathtub and we're all just like, because a lot of it came down to budget. We were like, what can we do really easily? Not have to like, so didn't have a lot of money to spend on a video. So we're like, well, what can we get that's really easy? Like a one shot thing. We have the guys who filmed it was our friends from Context Films. Mm-hmm. So we were quite close to them. I was like, we can get them down. And I was like, yeah, we're kind of umming and ahhing about it. And I was like, oh, why don't we just get a bath and then we're all lying it and then the water will slowly rise. Easy peasy. And then we're like, yeah, that actually sounds good. And then putting that into fruition wasn't too hard. Like that was actually filmed in James's back garden video. I found a bathtub on Facebook Marketplace, like so I drove to this dude's house, pick up a bathtub, and then all the tiles, I worked at, we were all living in Aylesbury at that point. Well, that's where James is from. And I was working at the B&Q store there. So I just bought these tiles. They're like the sticky back ones. Mm-hmm. So we just folded over that bit, placed them down, got a bath mat, made it look like it was in a bathtub. And then, a bathroom. And then to offset is all like the other three of us just filling up this bathroom there. And then we sort of did it. So I was the first to get in and we did it. We sang, because it's also, we had to sing at double speed because to make it kind of the effect of it. And it got to like end of the song, it's probably about up to like just below my head. And like, cool, we put it halfway back, and then it went over. And then that's kind of what we did for everyone. And it was really quick. It was done in like a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And we returned all of the things we used, like the bath towels. and now that bathtub is now in James's garden. His mum's using it as a plant pot, basically. But yeah, so it was a really inexpensive thing. It just came out really well.
And I think at the time, because I was talking to my friend about it, I bumped him in at Christmas, and he was saying, like, that sort of video looks good. We did it for, what, £400?
Yeah.
But even if it was a £5,000 budget, like, I think that's what we're trying to, when we try to make the videos, we just think, how could we, the simplest idea ever, like, we don't have any money, and making videos is expensive. Even if you had, like, a £5,000 budget, like, do you know what I mean? You could maybe get like a great one, but obviously we don't have that. So we're just making it super simple and just getting that message across. And I think a video like that can do well. If we had a bigger budget, it would have looked better, but in its...
The core idea was the same.
Yeah, core idea is the same, so...
It just would have looked visually, I guess, a bit prettier. But I think that's going back to what we were talking about earlier. Like, we have learned that just through those...
Yeah.
A lot of formative years. We made a lot of videos that never really surfaced because... the ideas were too big. We were trying to create this big story and realizing, oh wait, like, I mean, that is possible and to get those grand ideas in small budgets, but I mean, we don't really know anything about filming, so we made these videos for a few of the songs that just looked like the idea was there, but we just didn't capture it because we were aiming too big. We needed to, okay, what's the core part of this video that actually matters, which we can achieve. So I guess that's how we look at making videos now, like, but yeah, again, that just comes through learning and time. Mm-hmm. So the Sunday video just came from thinking small, I guess, and
yeah,
but that came from years of the making things wrong.
The thing is with that, it's like those moments or those that thing that you captured is really hard to capture, right? It's like, it's so simple, the idea. And if you had a £5,000 budget, you'd have a lot more cutaways, a lot more locations, a lot more, you know, lighting things, and the editing would be more complex and all this other stuff. But just having that as the idea was all you needed.
I agree. Right?
It delivered the message like in a way that I remember it now. My memory's getting worse every day. So the fact that, you know, sticks with me shows that, but it's hard to capture those, isn't it? It's hard to like really distill something down to a simple message that is somehow like visually as enticing as like beautiful as that was. It's really hard to do that, but you guys did it with that one.
Like, yeah, the song complimented it as well. Like, it was just a good matchup. The song had that nice imagery, so we just sort of ran with that. And it was a fairly... It's like our friends in October Drift just put a single out. The song out, sorry, a few months ago, of them just running in like a misty airport, like an airfield. And it just really works because of the lyrical content in the song. Like, it's quite a simple idea. Maybe a used idea, but we had plenty of references for the Sunday video of like bands doing similar style videos, but they just connected.
I think it's, yeah,
we just thought about the song and what it needs.
There's another thing in the Chinaverse history of just us see what we can just get away with. Like at the time, is this gonna work? And then I remember filming it, like, oh yeah, I think we might pull this off, and like. Doing these like DIY things, and like Freya said, this like it's thinking about visually how do you want this song. Like, I guess it worked well, but that wasn't necessarily coincidental because we'd thought about, oh, what's the right imagery for this song and the right idea. I guess that's this band really, see how much we can.
It was interesting. A couple of things also that you've said that. We've actually featured a lot of creative people on the podcast already. It's because we find ourselves being creative. We often are attracted and want to have creative people on, hence why we chose you guys as well. And it's interesting, two things that you've said seem to be a theme within all of our creative people. And it's a really nice one that I like that is building. And it's that One, failure is such an important part of success, and pretty much every creative person we've had on has reiterated that statement and solidified it and painted over it, and you know, and it's a really strong one. But also the other one is that seems to be consistent is that creativity seems to be medicine for people. And you know, you guys said, and you kind of joked about it, that the band was started because it was there to deal with hard times. And I think I'm sure there's air of truth in that, for sure. You know, I'm sure there's air of truth in that. And I think it's so true when we as creatives put passion, when we put love, when we put time, when you work on something for days, weeks, months, and then you put it out there, it means so much to you. And not only that, but also at the time when you're doing it, the reasons why you do it mean so much to you. And you look back and you go, oh, I remember like all of the pain that I went through to get to this final product. But at the end of it, you're like, wow, that final product made all of that worth it. And I feel so much better for it. And it's nice to, again, because again, we've had artists, we've had like solo musicians, we've had people who do weird creative things within meditation, filmmakers, climbers. Again, for you guys to reiterate both of those things, it just shows, you know, what a powerful thing creativity is. And not only that, I was actually going to say, I love that you guys are brothers that I met when we were 16, who still, because again, a lot of siblings don't have this kind of relationship that you guys have. And you guys are so lucky in that way. I actually wanted to ask, how's it been being next to your brother on stage, writing music, you know, battling through style differences and like music tastes and trying to find each other as well as individual selves through this process? How's that relationship done? Have you guys taken a toll in any way or anything?
I think the fact we are brothers taught me a lot of like maturity in creating quite early on, because I remember when we first started China Bears, when we were 16, and Ivan was very opinionated and very like I guess what you say opinion, but it was he knew what he wanted and he was very confident in his ideas, and that made me angry because he was telling me what to do. But really, when I was honest with myself, it was like, I wasn't angry because he told me, I was angry because there was a rivalry between us that I didn't think of anything better. And once I just let that go and be like, well, I trust his ideas, we just started collaborating better. And then, you know, he would give me like an idea and I would put my own spin on it. And then it just sort of, and from that point, we just got on really well. And I just learned a lot about that. And I learned that, like, because when you're young and a little bit more arrogant, you're just sort of like, well, yeah, I don't have the best ideas in the room. And this guy taught me that, and we could just make better if I just leave my ego in the door. And yeah, so from 16, that's kind of when I sort of learned that. And yeah, and we also get on really well, and we can be honest with each other. Do you know what I mean? So it's not.
Yeah, really. I think that. Yeah, that helps that we're brothers actually, with the honesty. Like, if something sucks, I'll be like to Fraser, oh man, that's not very good. Or Fraser's, if I'm like, oh, Fraser, I wrote this today, or these. And like, it's kind of tough, I guess, because like, you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
Put hours into something and then Fraser would be like, nah. I'm like, but you know, I also kind of know that as well. I've spent ages on this thing and I'll be like, yeah, it's really good. But I also know, I'm not surprised when Fraser's like, oh, you know, I like most of it, but some of it, that tiny bit could be better. Mm. And I think it's quite nice to have, we try and bring out the best of each other. Whereas sometimes when it's just on your own, you'll kind of, I guess, ease up on yourself a bit, like, oh no, this is good enough. And then when you really kind of like, oh, like think about it, it's like, oh no, I've got not just myself to impress, but the way I like this phrase is kind of like my subconscious, like, I know that it's not good enough, but I'll kid myself that it is good enough. And then Fraser would be like, it's like another slap in the face. Like, no, Ivan, come on. This could be better. And you're like, oh yeah, you're right. And I did know that.
Yeah.
But I just needed someone to tell me. And I think that's the way we both work. If Fraser brings something, I'll be like, we can be that kind of harshness to each other, which I think the other two, like James and Dean, we've kind of learned to do that together now. But I guess it was an easier, it's easier to be that cruel, I guess, when you're brothers, because at the end of the day, you're still brothers and you might argue, but then 10 minutes later, we'd be fine. Like, there have been so many times where we've just been, I kind of feel sorry for James and Dean, really, because we'd be like screaming at each other. Well, not as they scream, but really angry at each other. And then 2 minutes later, we'd just chill.
Well, like, it's, you know, it's, we're over that. It's passion.
Yeah, it's we understand it's never coming from a place of, I think it's like Fraser said, it's not to bring someone down. That's not saying this is rubbish because you're rubbish. It's just, oh, this, you have better within you and we can do better. It's coming from a place of, yeah, getting the best out of it and passion. So, yeah, I think that's just been easier to navigate.
Yeah, we are lucky for that. Like, not every siblings have that. But even with our other siblings, we are quite like that, though. Like, we are just quite a close family. Because they also write music and are creative. So we've always had that bond, which has been quite nice. They're like trusted ears. So, yeah, which isn't very common, I think. But I think sometimes we might take that for granted.
Yeah, I think I definitely, like you were saying, I think about us playing all the shows together and writing since such an early age. I think sometimes you do kind of take it for granted, even with James and Dean, like us being like friends in a band. I think it's something you just get used to it, and then as a year like this year, you kind of realize once that's taken away. And because obviously obviously me and Fraser live together, but the other guys live further away from us, so we haven't seen each other since March and stuff. You kind of, yeah, oh, I guess I did take for granted that time where we just played multiple shows every week. And so, yeah,
lucky to have one another.
Yeah, it's lucky. I think when you take it away, you realize, oh yeah, we are lucky to be in a band with friends, being a band with my brother. It's actually a really nice thing that not everyone, because I think a lot of bands break up because not necessarily they're bad bands, it's just the relationships break down and then it becomes not fun and becomes harder than it needs to be. So yeah, I think we're in a fortunate position where we have these bonds, I think, which are really nice.
No, you know what's cool is, because you were talking about, you know, not all sibling bands can have the type of relationship that you guys have, but, and you said we're kind of lucky. I look at it as you guys have some skills. Like, first of all, to leave your ego at the door is really, really hard. Right, especially in a creative process,
regardless of whether you're with family or not.
Yeah, yeah. Harder with family, but to be able to be like, okay, I'm gonna go with that person's idea on this, even though I have an idea, that is really a hard discipline to have. And not just that, but also, Ivan, you were like, you know, Fraser's kind of like my subconscious as well. There's an element of you putting your ego aside as well. That's, I mean, you hear about like the Gallaghers, that's not happening with them. They're just killing each other, right? They're like going to war. Now, look, we see the outside of it, right?
Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, lot of like ego that kills creative teams, and you have to be able to figure a way through that. And a lot of it is just like having respect for each other, being able to communicate with each other. You guys say you do it with your family as well. I just think there's probably an element of you guys being really, you know, evolved in your basic human interaction abilities that carries on just so happens in this band as well, with James and Dean and you guys. And it's just a healthy environment that you guys probably take to other parts of your lives as well.
Mm. Yeah, I think you mentioned the Gallagher. We get asked that a lot, actually. Like, oh, is it like the Gallagher brothers? And I think, because it's that cliche of you almost expect us to be down each other's throats a lot, but really, we're just quite chill people.
Yeah. I think I would compare it to Kings of Leon. I watched their documentary and there's this one scene where they're proper ripping into, I mean, they had a lot of like substance abuse and alcohol abuse. So it was kind of documenting that part, and the drummer just sort of like, cause his brothers were the lead singer, and just sort of saying like, in a nice way, like, you are nothing without us. So remember, like, is equal, essentially. Like, you know, and we are nothing about you. And fame got to his head or something like that. I guess it was something that sort of argument. But it was just kind of brought home that, like, yeah, the four of us, you know, it's equal. And, you know, in our writing, we always try everyone's ideas. Like, so even if, I think what I learned early on, if like Ivan's really arguing about a point, it's, he obviously cares about it more. And it's to put, and I'm some, if I can let it go easier, or maybe I should give it a chance. But we're always quite democratic, we're all diplomatic, where we try and hear everyone's idea, because even though I think we're mature enough to be like, we think we're right, but we're also willing to be wrong. So let's hear your idea anyway.
Nice.
And it could be better, it could be worse. I mean, there are issues with that as well, because sometimes, because then you're just kind of on defense all the time. And at the end of the day, it needs to be someone needs to make the call. But so, like, you know, we're not perfect in our writing, and we do get a lot of stuff wrong, and we still do fall out, you know, but we try to be as friendly and just, because it's creating is like a weird process. A lot of the time, it's not very nice because you're constantly scrutinizing what you're doing. So if you're getting along with the people you're doing it with, that makes it easier. So we just try and make it like just as fun for everyone, and also rewarding for everyone, because it's always nice when you have an idea in your head and you hear it out loud and you're like, oh, that sounds really good actually. So it's trying to give that feeling to everyone. Then the arguments start when it's like, well, which way is better?
But do you know what? I think I will say this as someone who, sadly, I've, like, man, I listen to your guys' music. I listen to a massive range of music at this point. And I've always wanted to be more musically inclined due to certain things with me. I struggle with, like, hand-eye coordination for guitars or drums and things like that. So I'm just not musically apt. And also, I'm not sure if you guys remember in choir, but I also suck at fucking singing as well, like, real fucking bad. And so, like, for me, hearing you guys, you know, talk about this so honestly and being so honest about, you know, the stripped back shit that does go on behind closed doors, because this is the thing, until you watch the Kings of Leon documentary, you see, you know, my sax is on fire, and you're just like, oh, cool, they're awesome, yeah, cool, Kings of Leon, great, you know, and you don't know what the trials and tribulations of creativity are. And, you know, it's something that I find, I skateboard a lot, and people who watch me skate in videos will be like, wow, you're awesome, like, you're so good, how, it must have taken you so long to learn these tricks. And I'm like, it's 14 years of hard work, and that trick there took me 4 hours to land. Yeah. Like, it's not an easy process. And so I appreciate you guys being honest about what that's like for you guys as a band, because it's, you know, it's definitely not something that many people within the industry share with the outer world. And, you know, I think it's awesome that you guys are honest about that, and that it's, you know, at the end of the day, we're all people. And I get that, you know, when I'm filming something with a friend, we have creative differences about angles, about how I imagine the shot in my head versus how they imagine the shot in their head. And it's, you know, it's about finding a muse between the two, or taking pieces of each person's thing until finally you have this meld of both. And I think you guys are, you're a testament to what hard work is. If anything that I've learned during this podcast talking to you guys is that you guys work fucking hard, like really fucking hard, you know, which is awesome.
I think you made a really good point there about being human, I guess. 'Cause, you know, we've had times in the practice room where we would argue a specific part, and then we would leave the room, like, not talking to each other. We'd really, and you kind of, at the end of the day, like, what does matter really? Like, going back to being in a band of people, like, you have to find the balance of being in a band of people who you care about. Cause it's like you become this weird family, and like, for example, creating with multiple people, as hard as it is, have a lot of the ideas thrown around and feelings. But at the end of the day, it's like, you want to be creating stuff you're proud of, but also remembering that there's four individual people in this room, and maybe what you're so hyped on about this particular thing, like, if you look at the bigger picture, is it worth the amount of, I don't know, the pain to get here? And sometimes you have to make those calls in your head. Like, there's times where I'm like, I really want this, and I think it's going to make it better, but I know it's going to take, it's going to upset someone or a few people in the room to get here. And you have to make those calls, and like, is it worth it? Sometimes it's like, yeah, we're going to need to argue this one out. And sometimes, sometimes it's no, actually, being friends is more important. That makes it sound like we're like drastically on the brink all the time. That's kind of like an over-exaggeration of it. But yeah, you do have to make these, well, in our band anyway, you have to make these calls of, oh, no, this bit's fine. Or no, this is really bugging me. And yeah, we need to, not necessarily get what I want, but I'm feeling a change. Something different needs to happen here. We need to find a way where we're all collectively happy with a change that's going to happen. Not necessarily it needs to be my way, but something isn't right here. It could be like the rhythm, the melody, the harmony. It's just, yeah, something's missing or not fitting with me. So, yeah, sometimes those issues come up and you have to deal with that. But we've learned to be more kind about, like, you mean, at the beginning, I was, early days, I, you know, look back and I was very much like, oh, it should be like this. And I didn't really realize, oh, I was talking to a friend, not just a player. You play this. It's, you know, oh, actually, what do you think? And then we meet somewhere in the middle, and it's just something you learn, and yeah, be a bit more,
yeah,
it's calming down a bit. Like, you have these like ideas and like, I'm gonna get this out now, but just communicating.
Yeah, sometimes that's not always the case. Sometimes you know, if I'm in reason of the song, or James, or if Dean has any ideas, it's kind of like, I'm like, well, what are you hearing on, like, because I, you know, I play lead guitar, so well, what are you, anything you're hearing, like a starting point you want me to go with, and if they have ideas or they don't, I'll go, you know, go from there. Or if they don't, I'll just like try and noodle away. But you know, I'm sure a lot of people create like that. But so, because I don't really feel like, and because James never played bass guitar before he joined this band, so I think a lot of the time, and I don't really feel like a lead guitarist, I just got pushed to lead guitar because when we started this band, I was better at guitar because Ivan was only learning. So a lot of, I feel as an arranger of in this band, and how I communicate that through with the audience is I play lead guitar. So I've never been like a flashy lead guitar player. It's always like, if you want me to play this one note the whole way through, I can do that if that benefits the song. Or if you want me to try and be a bit more like melodic or showy or whatever, like, I can do that as well. And I think James is the same with his bass playing. Well, we all are, really. I think we all just try to do what benefits the song. And I think we've got to a good headspace now where we don't want to be, and that's what we care about, really.
That last bit that you said, Fraser, is that if we're working toward creating the very best product we can, then that kind of contextualizes the heated arguments, right? It kind of separates, it justifies your passion. So if you're really passionate about something, then it kind of positions that in the right place, as opposed to letting ego slip in and having that passion be about me and me wanting to get what I want in, as opposed to forgetting about what's best for this particular project, this particular song, whatever. If you can just put it there, then everyone can kind of look at it that way. And those heated arguments can happen in a healthy way, right? And you can come out of those heated arguments and be like, okay, we have put our heads together, we banged our heads together, and we have come out through the fire of producing what we think is the best product. Well done, job well done, let's move on, right?
Yeah, it makes it sound really dramatic, and it can be. Yeah, it's any relationship. You know, you're figuring out how to talk to one another, like communicate with each other, what makes, you know, where are people's limits? Like, am I going too far here? Like, yeah, it's a constant figuring it out and having everyone's best interests in mind and just working out how to find a place where you can communicate your ideas and it be like a healthy, like, you still have arguments, there's always gonna be differences, but it's, yeah, making it like a healthy environment and getting the best out of each other, as opposed to like, upsetting people and feeling, making people feel put down, and you know, so it's yeah. something which we yeah we take, you know, we're better at these days. It's, we weren't so better at before, but it's a constant with any band. It's learning how.
Well, yeah, it's like with any creative team. Like as you get older, like we're not 18 in a band anymore. Like we're in our early 20s, so it's there's more stuff in life going on. Like there's bigger things of like what I want to do with my life. Like yeah, the band is a big part of that, but so it's what I mean by that. It's like making it fun, and there's a lot of sacrifice you have to do. So your whole life kind of has to revolve around it. So you want to be in it with people who want to be in it, and obviously if it's not fun for them anymore because they're not really getting anything out of it that they were hoping for, then they're not going to be in it. Mm. And or like, you know, why would they want to be in it? So yeah, it's just about having it a good environment for everyone, like a satisfying environment for everyone.
Do you know what's interesting from what you guys have said? I love the whole, you know, honesty thing. You know, it's super important because again, for people to just know, yeah, it's a battle to get to the magic that you guys do put out there in the world, which is badass as it is, you know. But also, it sounded a little bit like in the middle there, you said that you guys had some untapped potential individually that you guys are like bored. So it sounded like, Frozier, you're saying that, you know, I'm happy to play one note, you know, but, you know, I'm not doing anything flashy with the guitar. Does that mean that there's some untapped China Bears, crazy, like, jam sections coming our way where you guys are going to unleash this, like, potential out there, get some mad drum solos and bass going on and whatnot?
I don't know. We definitely, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, Dean, for example, is probably the best his instrument of all. Like, Dean is a phenomenal drummer, but really, everything in the songs, he has moments where he kind of gets a bit more technical, but a lot of it's kind of, you know, calm down. And I think it's just because it just suits the vibe. So I think it's, they're, you know, bringing elements of that into songs, but I guess we've never been showy people. I think it's, you know, Frozer could do a 5-minute guitar solo in one of the songs, but does anyone want that?
Like, really China Bears, is it? Like,
that's not, like, no one, like, if it fitted the song one day, then maybe, but no, we're not, just, no one really wants that, and that's not really, so yeah, I think it's not necessarily we feel bored on stage, that's not, I don't think that's the point Frozer making, but yeah, I think it becomes more about...
Yeah, what I mean by that is...
bigger picture, I guess.
Oh, it's yeah, like, of course, yeah.
What people... Yeah, so I always got quite anxious about, like, what would guitar players think of my guitar playing? Mm. And then really, it's like, well... Who, but then when I listen to music, I don't listen to what the good... You know, I listen to the song as a whole, and mainly, like, the melody and the lyrics and just a general vibe, like... I don't really go and think, oh, what's their guitar player doing? Mm. Or like really dissect. I try to dissect the parts, but I don't dissect who's playing what. So, and what I mean, yeah, it's like, speaking of the whole, like, why does it matter about what I'm doing if it fits the song?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that comes down to a confidence thing. And I think as we've gone on, you care less about,
What a guitar player should be doing.
And I think that's, you said something, I think, or maybe you said, like, about being a team, and it's like four people making one thing. So, you know, what's the saying? Like, the sum of the parts is... So it's like we're each individually doing a brushstroke and making China Bears. It isn't like I'm China Bears alone, or Frozer China Bears alone. It's like, well, we're a unit. Question. Probably no jam sessions.
I had a question, just sort of, it's kind of related, but just in sort of my own interest on talking to a band. When I hear a song that I like, part of it has to do with the hook, you know, the main like thing of it. Sometimes I hate that. So there's some songs that I can't get out of my head because they have a strong jingle, whatever, a strong hook on them. Do you guys, where does the hook fit into your creative process? Are you guys thinking about it at all? Is it the main thing? Is it just kind of happen organically, or how does that work for you?
I think it's definitely a thought. Like there's writing songs, and you know, I think you have to, as much as it is for you, like yourself, to write a song, you do have to be like, oh, how is someone else going to get into this? So, in terms of hooks and melody and lyrical choices, yeah, it's definitely a factor, because you want it to be enjoyed. But songs have different purposes. There are some songs which, yeah, this is one's just for me, really. But for you to be a successful band and people to, you know, it has to be memorable, and or has to connect in some way. So maybe that's through a hook, maybe that's through another part of the music. But I think a lot of stuff we've been writing right now, actually during lockdown, have been songs which have been on the back burner for a while. And I think the reason they've been on the back burner for a while is because there isn't that, like, that bit that defines them, that hook, that, like, there's something missing still, which is why it's not out. So, and that can take a long time to find, and sometimes it happens really easily. Like, songs like Cold Shivers, I think, just has that enter the chorus. It's like, oh, that's that hook, that line. Did You Mean All Those Things You Said Last Night? I think when we wrote that, it's like, oh, yeah, that's what I think of when I think of this song, that line and that part. So, yeah, it's definitely something conscious on our minds, and I think important in writing, but it can take a while to get there, unfortunately.
Have you guys been writing digitally? Have you guys been, like, connecting with Dean and James through, like, Zoom calls and trying to, like, write music through Zoom and shit? Or have you been, like, doing separate parts and sending each other shit? What's your career been over lockdown?
We haven't necessarily done something like this where I'll be playing and... Yeah, but we have done, like, made sessions on, like, Logic and sent over, got thoughts back. Yeah, it's been more of that, I suppose.
And in the bigger general sense of us just writing, like, individually. Yeah, I don't really know, because we've never done it before this way. So it's always kind of like difficult to know how far we can go with an idea. So like for me, when I'm demoing a song, I'll give a basic blueprint, but I don't like to go too far into because I kind of want to give them that freedom, unless I have a very visual idea of what I want. And same with Ivan, I think. But yeah, I think we've just been like racking up a little SoundCloud link of like ideas to kind of maybe just do when we get in a room together. Like, yeah. I don't think they'll feel like properly, you know, the latest.
Yeah, they
version.
Never, because I can make a demo on Logic and it's never the end product. But I think at the point, which it's about influencing. There's some times where, I mean, during this, look, that me and James have been texting a bit and he had this thing and I'm like, oh no, I want you to, he's like, what do you think where we should go? I'm like, no, it'd be cool to hear where your head's going for now. Like, I don't want to, like, I have my own ideas, but I don't want to show you yet because I want to see, like, I don't want to write, say, put a chord in there and that influences where you may or may not have gone. So let's run with your idea and then I'll run with my idea and then we'll come together and then take the best bits of both. Which has been quite an interesting way of collaborating. So I guess there's no right or, you know, one way to do things, but it's definitely been a new challenge for us, like working digitally, because we've also always been like a live band. So a lot of new songs we just play live, and then we'll just see how that goes. Oh, this didn't really fit right, so we go and rework it. But obviously without shows we've had to adapt to new ways of doing things, but luckily we live in such a digital age where it's really easy to do that, so it hasn't been too hard. But it's been a new chapter for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. So where are you guys usually based when you're not at home with your parents? Where are you guys usually living at the moment? Where's the band based out of at the moment?
Well, we're a bit all over the moment. We were all living weirdly in James's parents' house in Aylesbury. So we all met in Guildford and then we were there for a bit after uni and we all moved into James' parents' house. They were very nice and let us stay in, not, it wasn't like a bit, it was like a 3-bedroom house, so we all bunked, really. We were there for like a year and a half, and now we've moved back home. We moved back like Christmas time, and Dean lives just like near Kingston Way.
Okay.
So we're all a bit scattered at the moment, but we were sort of like going back saving and then finding a new base. Maybe Fraser and I will move somewhere that way. But I think, you know, going on about being in a band and financially, it's like, it is a struggle, and you have to find that balance of, yeah, like, because you put so much of your life around it, it's, again, renting just in general is quite, it can be quite expensive. So, yeah, that's, I guess, moving on into this chapter of our lives, we're figuring out how can we financially sustain ourselves and live.
So, just on that note, you guys were talking about 200 gigs. Was that 200 gigs in a year when you guys came out of uni?
We did about
over the 2 years.
Yeah, we averaged out past few years about 100 shows a year.
Yeah, and we were able to do, you know, and maybe like 10% of those shows were any good, in a sense of like, what's the word, like
financially
good, and like, you know, like a good show,
yeah,
like, you know, like good crowd, and like a lot of it was playing to limited people, sometimes no one, sometimes in weird places. But we were able to do that because we were financially okay, because we were just working like part-time jobs, and we, you know, James's parents were very nice and like gave us like limited rent, so we could take the time. You know, we were afforded the time to take these shows that were like, oh, it could be a bit shit, it could be all right. There might be someone there, it might not. Which isn't, you know, maybe the most financially stable, you know, clever way to do it. And it's not the only way to do it, it's just the way that we did. But from that, we did get a lot better at playing live. We got a lot better at learning how to play live. And also, we just managed our expectations a lot. Yeah. And I think we got a bit more, like, grateful for when the shows were good. And I guess it solidified why we're doing it, because it's easy to do it when it's going well. But when you drive 3 hours and play to no one and then drive 3 hours home to be up to, you know, 8 hours of work, you're kind of like, why am I doing this? Well, because I see something in it, and I know that, like, maybe, you know, there is maybe a future in it.
Well, so, you hear about, like, who was it? I think maybe Ed Sheeran was talking about, like, similar type of thing, like, did, I don't know, like 1,000 shows over the course of, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or something like that, but literally like 3 or 4 shows a week. But yeah, there's so much value in just reps, right? In getting up on stage and playing the song, like eventually, like, you become more comfortable with your craft, right? With doing it, even if you're in front of, it's an open mic and there's like not a lot of people in the crowd, you're honing your craft so that, you know, then when you are in front of, you know, whatever, a few hundred people, whatever, that are up for it, that's not overwhelming either, because you've done the work that leads up to that.
And if, you know, a lot of like sound issues go, or, you know, like, it's when that happens. So there's been times when like a string is broken, or like the lead's breaking, or I can't hear myself from the monitor. When you play it, when that happens and no one's in the audience, it's like, okay, cool. And when it happens when there is an audience, it's like, well, I know how to deal with this now. Or you just learn to adapt a bit better. So it's making those like mistakes, because mistakes happen in the live setting. It's such a chaotic atmosphere sometimes that anything can go wrong, but you're just trying to make it as seamlessly professional as you can make it. And when you're used to that, it doesn't really matter.
I think it's like, not to, like, it's with live shows particularly, like, you know, we got to meet a lot of people. We also got to practice meeting people, you know, like, as Birdie said, you know, you probably remember there's quite shy people, and like, it's definitely brought out I guess, in an intro, had to like become more extroverted, and yeah, we're better at talking to people and just more comfortable being in a place where we've never been before. And
it's getting to the show as well. It's stuff like, oh, where are we driving to? I don't know. I guess we just put the sat nav on and figure it out when we get there. Stuff like that. You're put into these positions where you're like, well, how do I figure this problem out now?
Yeah, well, like, it's 3 a.m. and we've only got 10 miles of fuel left, and the petrol station's 12. It's like,
that actually happened, didn't it?
You know,
that wasn't a random one.
It's the fun things you get into and these like little life lessons, and you become like just easier problems, like things, you become more, I guess, chilled and things will be okay. It's less, I'm definitely less anxious about doing these things. And like Fraser said, when things go wrong live now, it's not, it's huge, you know, you learn to adapt. Like, you know, the amount of times we played venues where Dean has never had a drum monitor next to him. So Dean probably can't hear anything. We don't play with in-ears at all. So it's all on stage. You're kind of relying on your monitors, but he can kind of play the set and he probably doesn't hear anything apart from his drums. And you know, that's like, I look at him like, how the hell are you doing that? But you know, and then when you get to a sound check, and you know, I don't like to talk smack about other bands, but like when the headliners like eat into like the support band, I know like they have to get their sound right, it's their show, and they've worked a long way to get this to this position. They wanted it to sound good, but you know, when they're like, you know, getting, it's like the venues we're playing aren't particularly like super big, and but when they're getting really minute on like the fine details, and then you're kind of like, I guess, not becoming this, oh, they're not really super relaxed and all-rounded, and those little things don't really matter. It's about relationships with people, and it kind of brings a weird vibe on a night, and it becomes like an us and them kind of thing. And yeah, I think, you know, when we're in that position, hopefully, I don't want to come across as that kind of headline band. It's like, the point I'm trying to make, it's, you know, the supports are just as valuable, and everyone's working really hard, and everyone's sacrificing a lot, and and you know, giving like a support band like 5 minutes of sound check, you know, it's not really ideal for anyone, this kind of thing. You just ground yourself a bit, really. I think the whole thing is just grounded us as people, and we just really like heading out and playing shows and meeting people and all those experiences, the ups and downs, the lowest lows and the highest highs.
do you know what, you said that in a really respectable way, Ivan, you know. No offense to anyone there. I would have just gone with, headliners, don't be fucking dicks, taking up our fucking time, like, come on now. But no dude, like 100%, I feel that. I was actually gonna ask you, what is your like biggest pet peeve when it comes to doing your live sets? Would you like, I was going to say, is it like the sound not being quite right because the sound technician hasn't got it quite right, or monitors not being set up, or headline bands eating into your time? Do you have like a pet peeve that is just like, God, every fucking time?
I think being able to hear yourself is, we played a lot of shows where we can't, so we've got better at it, but it's just your mental space when you're playing a show. Like if you can hear yourself back and you think you're playing well, you'll just perform it better. And there's a lot of times when you get into your own head, you're like, oh, this sucks, I suck. And then when you go off and you finish, and you maybe you talk to a friend who's in the show, you're like, oh, was it okay? They're like, yeah, I didn't even think that was a problem. So if anyway, maybe it's good that we've had a lot of rubbish sounding on stage shows, because you kind of like just get out of your head. But yeah, my biggest stress is parking. I hate parking.
That says it all, right?
It's like literally fine. Like,
honestly, when you turn up and they have a car park, you're like, oh my God.
Like that's my biggest pet peeve about live shows. It's just the stress of parking.
I think it's parking, fear of your stuff getting robbed. It's not almost like having kids. Like after the show, like people will be like, oh, you're gonna come out and we might be in a city where we want to go explore, but it's like, oh, we have all this stuff with us, and like we can't afford that this is gone. So you're kind of tied to your things. But but you know, I think that's when, as this band rises, you know, if we ever had a driver, we'd be like, wow, like we have someone's actually going to drive us, and we don't have to worry about parking, and like these little things where, you know, as this band is, you know, building, I just feel like we'd be grateful for these things. And as you were saying about sound and stuff, like, you also, I guess we're quite real about it, like, as in, the sound engineer, like, we have a sound check, but he doesn't know, or she doesn't know, the peaks and troughs of our set. They're listening firsthand, probably, so you can't be angry if they put a huge delay, and then you go down to, like, a really quiet bit. It's like, they didn't know that that was coming, so... Yeah. Just, and then the audience doesn't really care either. Like, so you kind of these you just have to like just chill out a bit, like just forget, you know, it's like it's not the end of the world.
Until you have your own team around you, you kind of have to be accepted those things might happen.
Yeah.
And there are bigger things to worry about.
You know, like as a if I was coming to see a China Bears show, the thing that would bum me out is if the sound engineer had gotten it to a place where it's not like there's shows that I've been excited to go see and I go there and I can't hear the vocals at all.
Yeah.
And it absolutely infuriates me. I've left shows that I've wanted to be at because it's not, the band is not being represented the way they are. And so, especially like you guys, if I was to come to your show and I didn't hear the lyrics, because I think the lyrics are a big part of who you guys are, I would be bummed. So I don't know what I'm saying. I guess I'm saying like, if you guys have sound engineer like tips, make sure that you guys vault towards featuring what you guys are awesome at, which is your lyrics and your vocals and all of that.
And we try to be as clear as we can with the sound engineer, like, you know, on the night, if they've never met us before, never done sound for us, we'll, you know, be like, okay, center vocals main, but backing vocals are kind of more choral, so this type of reverb, this type of delay. And then that's what's great about soundcheck time. So, you know, we'll play like one of our biggest songs, like not like a
loudest
songs and like songs of different vibes. So it's like he or she gets a small palette. So when we're actually playing, they're kind of aware. And you know, the biggest lesson I learned ever was just be nice to the sound person.
Yeah, and, they can fuck you, can't they?
And not to be like, you know, I mean, they are people too working the job, not to like for your own benefit, but it's just from the get-go, understanding the importance of them. Because you know, you can play amazingly, but if no one can hear you, like, or they're not hearing the right part, or too much, or too less.
Yeah, I think like it's not. Yeah, I think the point you made is good. It's not to say those things aren't important, of course. But I think it's like, for instance, if you communicate at the start of the set, like in the soundtrack, as best as you, and you learn that. Like we've learned that before. Someone was like, "What reverb do you want? Plate or spring?" And I was like, "I don't know what that is." you know, you kind of. You learn what you like, and if you don't understand at the start, that's fine. You just the more we've done it, the more you get used to it. But yeah, and it's just expressing as best as you, like communicating as best as you can at soundcheck how this band sounds and what, you know, which how the balancing should be. Vocals sits on top, everything kind of like just under. And but you know, if then it's out of your control. So what I mean is, like, if something goes wrong, it's like not to be like, "Oh, I'm really in."
Just release it.
It's just like, build, you know, I think a sound engineer in the live team would be is the next step really for us. Like, if we were to, you know, if we could afford that, we would definitely bring. We have friends who would love to come out, and obviously people want to do it for free, but like friends said, "Oh, I was it," but then. When you put that into real time, if they got to take time off work, and also car space is a huge thing, because then
the practical sort of
and also you don't want to exploit your friends in that way. Like, you know, they're that's a craft which they spend a long time to, you know, and that's a passion of theirs. So, yeah, I think just as this band builds, those things will come on board, and then because sound is really important. Like you said, it can make or break a show. And there have been times people said, "Oh, I can't hear what you're saying," and that is a disappointment because, you know, like I said, we're a lyrical band. We're not, you know, Fraser's lead guitar part is super loud. It's like, well, I guess that might sound cool, but that's not the main focus of this band. So,
yeah,
it's just at the start in those sound checks, just being as clear as you can.
Sure, it's a weird one. You know, sound check is such an important part, and also like something else that I think. I'm not sure how much you guys have experienced this, obviously, because, you know, when you are touring around doing, you know, in some cases pubs, in other cases, you know, places like the Exchange that are a little bit more upscale, and then, you know, things like the Bristol O2 that are, again, another step up. You also get different lighting rigs that go with each of those as well. And I think, you know, a big thing that often people underestimate is, you know, like you said, the visual part of this is like, what lighting is going for you guys? Like, again, it would be a bit weird if you guys had strobe lights for like the entire portion of your set, you know, it wouldn't really fit. So again, like it's so important. And do you know what you mentioned earlier, one of you said it's about building a relationship and communicating with one another, just like any other relationship. But I was actually going to contest that and say, I would say it's even harder for musicians and their tech guys to communicate, and musicians within bands, because you're communicating with words. You're then communicating with sound and instruments. You're communicating with, you know, again, technical jargon that is, you know, like you said, someone will come up to you and be like, what reverb do you want? This or this. And you're like, fuck knows, you know, like all this communication stuff is so important. It's such a key factor in this. You know, it's really interesting that you guys, I think, also are at an even bigger disadvantage because you have to communicate with instruments, with sound. You got to be like, look, this needs to sound this way. And I can't really explain what that sound needs to be, but when I hear it, I'll tell you, and you can then, and we'll like, no.
I think, I think something to add on to all this, which is kind of your point, I think it's, that's not necessarily someone else's job, but I think, you know, we've spent a lot of time about how, so the point I was making, so Dean, if he has a monitor, there's no like real onstage monitoring for anyone. It's like, well, we've spent a long time figuring out in a practice room how we want this band to sound, like the tones and what comes out where. So, you know, hopefully, even if we're in a room which isn't the best suited and there isn't the biggest PA system or like most suit PA system, it's like you'll still get a fair representation of what this band sounds like and what we're about, as a, you know, contrast if you saw us in something like The Exchange, which has a, you know, very nice sound system. And so I think that's, there is obviously an element of the sound technician's job there, but also that comes from what you want. Like, you know, you need to say, oh, I want this this reverb on my vocal, because I know that that's, you figure out that's what I like the sound of. And that just takes time and experimentation, and with amp settings, like figuring out,
yeah,
you know, and that's all just things you learn.
Like, we haven't really figured out the lighting because we've never really...
Yeah, we've never been in a position.
But like, we played with a band called Yonica. And what's great about just touring and like supporting bands is like seeing the next level and being like, well, they had a light and a sound engineer like on tour of them, and they were just like incredible. And you're like, wow, that's what we need to be. That's like the next step for us. Mm-hmm. And it's like realizing how much of a show that looked. And it was just a couple of years ago. It was an older show. There wasn't many people there, but it just felt like a special show. It's like, wow, it looked amazing.
Yeah, it felt like a stadium shit. Like the lighting felt like, and then, you know, they've gone on to support bands like Bring Me the Horizons, and
yeah,
you know, like they're playing like those kind of venues now. But they made those small venues,
yeah,
look
like they were ready for that. If you see,
yeah, it's like kind of a band when you see a band, it's like they're playing on a smaller stage than they should be. Or like, you know, this show would work on a bigger stage. I think that's like a really special thing. I think that's just something which we're aiming for. Like, you know, making the show.
Getting used to those bigger
stages. Yeah, like this show works on this small stage, but it also fit like a bigger stage. And that's just learning.
I have a question. Maybe it's for all of us. If you were to select one band, maybe it's not even a band, a performance, could be a solo artist, small venue, only gig you're ever going to see again, packed house, who is that artist that you're going to see that is your number one?
Toughy.
Could be a band.
Maybe something like Frightened Rabbit or The National would be.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, we saw that you listed one of your inspirations as The National. Yeah. So that's awesome. Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to see him in that smaller space though.
No, I would.
Yeah, they're more of a bigger festival type thing, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one, to be fair. I think maybe an acoustic, like maybe something like that, like who I've been listening to.
I'll tell you what, I'll go while you're thinking.
Yeah.
I would go, I think acoustic is right as well, but I would, and this is not going to be a surprise to you, to you, but the Chili's have just sort of reformed with John Frusciante's back. Yeah, into that. Yeah. So I'd love to see them sort of in a small venue where they don't have to blast out too much, but they can just kind of, you know, bask us with their musical talent and the vocals and that would be awesome for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
Did I steal yours?
No. I was actually going to go with a female fronted band called Blue Pills. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of them.
Yeah.
They're little bit heavier, like lots of like electronic, like guitar, lots of heavy rock kind of more, I'd say, but
they
absolutely wail. And in a small venue, that would just be chaos. Like, I
would you call them a jam band?
No, not quite, but like verging, But
the jam sections.
Yeah, I would just go to that, just because for me as well, like gigs are an experience for people who like watching them. I love going in mosh pitting. Like, I love a good mosh, and I also love a stand and chill gig, like where I like to stand at the back. So completely dependent. But for me, I think if I was to go small venue, I'd want something absolutely crazy. Like something like The Exchange with a band that big would just be packed and would be nuts. So that's kind of where I'd be at. What about you, Fraser? Where are you at?
I think I would pick Manchester Orchestra.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yes. They're too big. They don't come over to the UK very often. And it's like obviously bigger venues now. But interestingly, like it reminds me of I saw Wolf Alice a few years ago when they did an independent venue run, and it was really we both went and like it was at the Boiler Room in Guildford, and that was really sway. Like, you know, they were doing Brixton on the December tour, but played like a 250 cap room. And I don't think I really liked it being so packed. So I think I would still stick with an acoustic set. Because it was
a bit of a sweat box.
It was fun, don't get me wrong, but it was like, so sweaty. And so, but then maybe that was cool as well.
It reminds me of, do you remember we went to The Exchange and saw, so this is also tied into the band, what's the girl band, something?
Blue Pills,
yeah. But when we saw the 100, them at The Exchange, it was one of those where it was it was so small, thrashy, like moshy, but also there was a lot of stage presence. There was
also the venue though was because it was at The Exchange, but there was no one there. Like this band was like pretty much unheard of at this point, and they actually broke up like 2 years ago, amazing. Which is really sad. But there's 50 people there. And it was such big noise that 50 people filled the whole like audience room with just like movement. It was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. Yeah. Do you know what I was going to ask? And as we're coming to like the 1:15 mark, I was going to ask, do you guys have any plans for anything new coming out? What's the next kind of step for China Bears? Are we getting any new music soon? Give us some teaser. Yeah, excite me. Please give me something to be excited about.
We've got the next song coming out next Friday, so the 14th, is that?
Yeah, 14th.
We're recording this new EP, and then obviously lockdown happened, so we didn't really, we finished the bulk of it, but a couple of songs we haven't finished, so we've had to sort of, we were hoping it would be out by now, but obviously with everything going on. So we've got one song coming out, the first one came out in March, I think. And the next song is coming out next week, a song called Statue Still.
Amazing.
And then the next song after that
will be like Autumn Time.
It will be Autumn Time, I guess.
And then hopefully we'll be able to sort of get back in a room together, finish off the EP. And then maybe for like a March, every March release.
We're like booking this tour for March. Whether that is allowed to go ahead, we don't know yet. But currently all the systems comes out in February next year. Do the tour. And then,
Is that through Fierce Panda? Again,
it's coming out through Fierce Panda, So yeah, and they've been great. Like, you know, even now discovering them, it's one of those things. Like, it's taking all these shows. Like, we actually met them 3 years ago at a show. Then we played a bunch, and then we met them again 2019 in London, and then by that point we'd already recorded the EP. And we sent it to them, and they've just been a huge help. Like, so it's been nice. It was all very independent, and now we worked with them, and it still feels all quite independent and small. And they're really nice because they're like a good advisor, and they still let us do everything we want, and it's all very collaborative as well. They've been a great team and a great help. And you know, with their help, we've got a lot more cool opportunities coming along our way. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been good.
Dope. Well, guys, we'll round this off. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you guys, giving us a deep dive into what it's like to be a band, what that process is like. not only that, it's great to see you guys looking so healthy. Ivan, obviously, when I last saw you, you did not have that majestic mustache. That is fucking beautiful, dude. Like, I bet ladies are just dropping at your feet for that thing. That is so fucking amazing, mate.
You look just one day, just like grow a mustache. Everyone's like, grow a mustache.
Guys, thanks for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Anyone who's out there, please check out the China Bears. They rock. When the gigs start coming back in, I will definitely, if I'm in the country, be going to a couple of those, for sure. Other than that, if you guys want to shout out, drop your like Facebook, Instagram, anything like that. Do you guys want to drop any of that in here before we end this?
It's just at China Bears Band, pretty much, on most things. Apart from Instagram, it's just at China Bears. Cool. So it's fairly easy to, if you just Google China Bears Band, that's pretty easy to find. Awesome. Or spot everywhere, Spotify, all that.
Perfect. Amazing. Well, it's been episode 12 of Homie and the Dude.
Episode 12 in the bank. Thanks, right. Guys.
Thanks, guys.
Nice to meet you guys. Yeah. I'd love to see you guys. Yeah, when you are performing again, that'd be awesome as well.
If you can
an oldie, being in your crowd, I'd be honored to be, to represent my generation. Yeah, well, awesome. We have just a quick one for anyone that's watching. Reach out to us with any comments, likes, follows, and subscribes. Keeps us, as you guys were saying, you need sort of inspiration from your audience. We feed off of our audience as well. So, guys, thank you for what you're doing to support us, and continued support would be welcomed and appreciated. So, thanks, guys, and we will see you soon.
Cheers.
Take care.
Yeah.
Later, guys. Yeah.